Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. One of the Fairbanks four is wanted on felony assault and criminal mischief charges. 40-year-old Kevin Pease is charged with causing fear of injury with a weapon and over $750 in property damage for a December 7th incident in which police say he broke out windows of a woman's car with a baseball bat while she was in the vehicle. Pease is additionally charged with driving under the influence for an unrelated incident. Pease is one of four Native men convicted of a 1997 Fairbanks murder, convictions which were erased under a settlement reached 3 years ago following a hearing which pointed to other people being responsible for the killing. The Fairbanks Four are suing the city of Fairbanks in federal court for wrongful imprisonment. There was a hearing yesterday for a lawsuit contesting the ballot tally in a close Fairbanks State House race. Judge Eric Arseth is reviewing the case filed by Democrat Catherine Dodge, who lost to Republican opponent Bart Laban by one vote. As KUAC's Robin reports, Arseth will make recommendations to the Alaska Supreme Court, which will hear the case in January.
Arseth heard arguments picking through 9 challenged ballots, 3 from Dodge, 5 from Laban, and 1 from both of them. That one had both ovals filled in for the House District 1 race, but also an X on the oval for Bart Laban. The Dodge campaign said it should count as the voter rejecting Laban, but lawyer Stacy Stone, representing Bart Laban, says her side thought it should count as a valid voting mark for Laban.
The recommendation from Judge Arseth was not to count that ballot.
The Laban side argued 3 ballots with odd markings should count for him, but were thrown out as invalid. Stone says they also asked for 2 absentee ballots from the same address to be counted.
We assume they're a husband and wife, we're not sure, but one voter had the other voter's voter identification and vice versa.
The Dodge side challenged a question ballot from a voter whose address changed when he registered for the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend last year. He showed up to vote in District 1, but was not on the roster, so he voted a questioned ballot, in this case for Catherine Dodge. Arseth said he would recommend the Supreme Court not count that ballot.
Through his PFD applications pursuant to the law, registered himself for a district other than District 1.
From the Dodge side, they challenged 2 absentee ballots from a woman who listed her address in an auto glass repair shop and a doctor with an address at an office. Arseth said the 2 absentee ballots, both which were for Laban, should be counted. Arseth will release his written report today, recommending all the rulings by the Division of Elections be upheld by the Alaska Supreme Court. If they do, the vote count will remain the same, with Bart Laban the winner by 1 vote. The Supreme Court hears arguments in the case January 4th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Christmas Eve will mark 1 year since 20-year-old Cody Ayer was fatally shot by law enforcement officers in Fairbanks. City police and Alaska State Troopers were called to do a welfare check on Ayer, who was distraught, had a handgun, and refused to obey responding officers during an interaction as he walked along Fairbanks Steese Highway and a side road. In an October press conference, when some police video of the incident was released, Police Chief Eric Jukes described officers' repeated efforts to resolve the situation peacefully.
They called out to Cody approximately 78 times. 78 times they said something like, drop the gun. Cody, you've got to stop moving. You've got to stop walking. Don't do it. Cody, don't do it. Let's talk. We can get you help. Some other affirmative attempt to let him know that there's another way out of this.
Chief Jukes said officers, 2 of whom had crisis intervention training, fired when Ayer pointed his gun toward them and made a threatening comment. An investigation found the officer's use of deadly force was lawful, but Ayer's family disagrees. Cody Ayer's sister, Samantha Harrison, questions the way law enforcement approached the situation from the start.
It's really important to be able to differentiate between someone who is having a mental health emergency and someone who's acting with criminal intent. And to make that decision, to make that differentiation, right there in the beginning, and then deploy 2 different protocols that don't look the same.
There's a plethora of choices that could be done differently.
Cody Ayer's father, Kyle, points out that some responding officers carried AR-15-style assault rifles, characteristic of what he describes as the militarization of law enforcement.
For lack of better words, It's almost like law enforcement has declared war on the American people.
The heirs say they are trying to file a lawsuit but continue to struggle to access case evidence, including complete video and audio recordings of the incident.
The general public has kind of viewed it as like, oh, great, they released the body cam footage. You know, it's a done deal. No, it's not a done deal.
Cody Ayer was Alaska native, and his family is pushing for more robust, culturally sensitive law enforcement crisis intervention training. The family is divided between Fairbanks and Juneau, and Cody Ayer's grandmother, Linda Downs, says she plans to stage a rally on the Capitol steps on Christmas Eve to raise awareness about the need for better training.
Being able to do anything you can to prevent young people from dying is really critical, I think.
Events are also planned for Fairbanks on Christmas Eve. Harrison says the family will retrace the four-mile route Cody walked before his death. Promotion of the walk and other events are part of an ongoing social media campaign.
Cody's platform, we call it hashtag Keep Walking with Cody. And the reason we call it Keep Walking with Cody is because on the night of his death, he was choosing life. He was choosing to go on a walk.
The Ayer family say members of the public are invited to join them for the last mile of the Christmas Eve walk and a candlelight vigil, followed by a party at the Westmark Hotel. Golden Valley Electric Association plans to close a coal ash processing site at its Healy 1 power plant. The facility, which has been leaking toxic heavy metals into groundwater beyond federal limits, is slated for shutdown in 5 years. And as KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, Golden Valley must develop a plan to clean up affected groundwater.
Golden Valley conceded in a report filed last spring that the system it uses to dry out ash from the coal-fired Healy 1 power plant has allowed more heavy metals to percolate into the groundwater than is permitted under rules issued in 2015 by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency.
Statistically significant increases in antimony, arsenic, lithium, molybdenum, and selenium.
Golden Valley Environmental Officer Naomi Morton Knight says those substances entered the groundwater from ash that's mixed with water and transported from Healy 1 in a slurry pipeline into a series of ash settling ponds near the power plant. The dried ash is then buried at the nearby Usabelli coal mine, where the power plant's fuel is excavated. Healy 1 is the only Alaska facility on a list of 67 coal-fired power plants nationwide that reported exceeding federal limits on substances from the ash contaminating groundwater. That's according to Earth Justice, a San Francisco-based environmental advocacy organization. Earth Justice Senior Counsel Lisa Evans says the rule on coal ash groundwater contamination is among a series of regulations adopted by the EPA in the aftermath of problems at several power plant ash disposal operations around the nation. The worst was a failure of a containment dam at the Tennessee Valley Authority's Kingston plant 10 years ago, which unleashed more than a billion gallons of sludge that covered about 300 acres in Roane County, Tennessee, and led to the deaths of more than 30 people and the sickening of at least 300 others.
That woke the EPA up to the great threat posed by the nation's mismanagement of the disposal of toxic coal ash.
Evans says that's why the regulation of coal ash disposal is essential.
Right now, Healy is using an unlined coal ash pond, and that pond has been shown to be leaking toxic metals.
Evans says Golden Valley would have to clean up the contamination and install a leak-proof liner in order to continue using the ponds. Knight says GVEA officials have decided instead to discontinue use of the ponds at the 65-acre Healy 1 disposal facility.
Just close our ponds and reclaim them.
Knight says Golden Valley officials will use a different method of initially treating coal ash from both Healy 1 and 2 before it's taken to Usabelli for burial. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And I'm Dan Bross.